Before we begin our study, we want to pray together. Baruch atah Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam, asher kidshanu b'mitzvotav, v'tzivanu la'asok b'divrei Torah. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who sanctifies us with your commands and commands us to be engrossed in the words of Torah. Amen. Every week we worship on Shabbat and we read from the scriptures. This is part of our commitment as disciples. And we read from the Torah, which are the five books of Moses. We read the Haftorah portion, which are selections from the prophets and writings from the balance of the Tanakh. And we also read from HaBrit HaChadashah, which are the writings of the New Covenant. We worship on Shabbat, and we're doing so because we follow the pattern of the Jewish people as well as the pattern of Yeshua and the pattern of the Apostle Paul. Did you know that it was the habit of the Apostle Paul, even when he was out of town ministering to the Gentiles, to go to synagogue on Saturday morning and to be present for the reading of the Torah and for Jewish worship? Now, one of the distinctives of Messianic disciples is that we are disciples both of Moses and Yeshua. And I want to focus on that this evening because every Jewish believer needs to be clear about this, and every Gentile believer needs to be clear about this. And that's why I want to look at two passages which show us how to understand our own discipleship. The first one is in John chapter 9. So let's turn there in our Bibles. You can follow along with me as I read. I encourage you to turn in the text and to read for yourself as well. If you have a Bible, I always like to see it. Would you show it to me? Your paper Bibles? Good. If you've got a digital Bible, you can wave it at me. Good, good. You're doing well. And if you don't have either, sit next to someone who does and read along with me. Starting in verse 1 of John chapter 9, it says, "As he went along, Yeshua saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him." Okay, here's the first case where the word disciples is used in this chapter. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Okay, so it says that the ones who are asking the question are what? His disciples, that's right. Yeshua was making disciples, so when he was going around, he had disciples with him. Now, how do you say disciples, plural, in Hebrew? Talmudim. Good, tell that to the person next to you if they didn't say it. Talmudim. Okay, now how do you say one disciple in Hebrew? Talmid. Talmid. Talmid in the singular, Talmudim in the plural. Okay, now the Talmudim say to him, "Rabbi, who sinned?" If you look in the Greek, you'll see something interesting. The word rabbi is transliterated into Greek letters. So the Greek uses this word, rabbi. It's not a Greek word, it's a Hebrew word. But it tells you something, that those who translated into Greek what was happening here wanted to make sure that you and I would understand how Yeshua's disciples saw him. They didn't say preacher man. They didn't say pastor, even though he is the good shepherd and even though he does preach the good news. They said rabbi. They called him rabbi. Now, why do you think they called him rabbi? He was the rabbi. He was their rabbi. And so they saw him as their rabbi, their disciples. Do you see this? And they're calling him rabbi. But they ask this question, so who sinned? Now, isn't that one of our first questions whenever you see somebody else in trouble? Now, when you see yourself in trouble, you never plead your sin, right? We plead our innocence to God. And if we can't plead innocence, we'll plead the blood of Yeshua over general sin. But this is a very common human thing to do. You see someone else in trouble, you say, oh, Somebody must have sinned here. Who was it? Mom or dad? Or maybe the man himself? And Yeshua says, neither this man nor his parents sinned. Isn't that a strong answer? Neither one of them sinned. Now, of course, they did sin because we all sin. I have good news for you. You're sitting next to a sinner. I have good news for you. They're sitting next to a sinner. We all sin, but the question really wasn't about that. It was, did this person sin so badly that God made them blind as a judgment? And Yeshua says, nope, it wasn't this man and it wasn't his parents. And then Yeshua says, this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Night is coming. Can you say that? Night is coming. You know, things can get even more difficult than they already are. How many of you knew that? And Yeshua is telling us we have to be prepared for that. And the way you get prepared for it is you see things from his point of view. Night is coming when no one can work. While I'm in the world, I'm the light of the world. So he's speaking to his disciples because he wants them to do the work of ministry. Do you get that? He wants them to see things the way he sees it. When he sees someone in trouble, he doesn't want to just analyze it. He wants to show compassion, to bring something good to that person. He wants to demonstrate it. Okay, now he just said, I am the light of the world, and then he's going to do something that is a little bit odd. Having said this, he spit on the ground, and he made some mud with his saliva, and then he put the mud in the man's eyes. Now let me ask you, if you did that, would the person let you do it, if you tried? It was a blind man. He couldn't see what was going on. It's true. He couldn't see what was happening. And so what happens from his experience is someone puts a compress on him. He doesn't know it's spit, maybe. He may not even know it's mud. But someone puts this on him and says, go and wash in the pool of Siloam. And so the man said, why'd you spit on me? No. Did the man complain? Did he say, what are you doing? What are you thinking? Why did you do this? No, he responded with obedience. The man went and he washed and he came home, what? Seeing. Isn't that interesting? He'd been born blind and Yeshua just healed him of his blindness. Now look at verse 8. Maybe you've been told this before. I have, by family and friends who have said, if God would heal this person, we'd all believe. How many of you have been told that? I remember my family said that about my mom when she had a brain hemorrhage. Well, if God would just do that, we'd all believe. You know, it's not necessarily true. And you'll see this in this situation. Verse 8, his neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg? And some claimed that he was, and others said, no, he only looks like him. But he himself insisted, I am the man. How then were your eyes opened, they demanded, they asked. And he replied, the man they call Yeshua made some mud and put it into my eyes. Okay, now he's explaining exactly what happened. He told me to go to Siloam and wash, and so I went and washed, and then I could see. Now I want you to understand what it means to be a witness of Yeshua. It means that you experience something firsthand that you can tell another person about. It's not that you hear about somebody else's experience. A witness is someone who has the experience. So this man is being a witness. He's telling other people what he's experienced. And I want you to notice something. he speaks the name of Yeshua clearly. He's not waffling about it. He is saying, the one who is named Yeshua, this is the one who put mud on my eyes and who healed me. And he's telling his neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging. In verse 12, where is this man? They asked him, and he says, I don't know. Well, they brought the man who had been blind to some Pharisees. Now, the day on which Yeshua had made the mud and opened the man's eyes was a Shabbat. Okay, so this was Shabbat, and it's a day. So what day is it? It's Saturday. Okay, so this happened on Saturday. And therefore, some Pharisees asked him how he had received his sight. And he said, well, Yeshua put mud on my eyes, and I washed, and now I see. Well, some of those Pharisees said, this man is not from God because he doesn't keep Shabbat. Now, I want you to stop for just a second. I want you to see something. This kind of controversy predates Gentile Christianity. Do you see that? No Gentile Christians on the scene at this moment. So this is an argument between Jews about Jewish stuff, and no one's saying this is not Jewish or whatever. They're just saying he doesn't keep Shabbat because he healed you. Now remember, Yeshua has a different position about Jewish law. He says Jewish law allows healing on Shabbat. Elsewhere, he says if you can circumcise on Shabbat, you can do a complete healing on Shabbat. And this is an issue between Jews, and the accusation is Yeshua doesn't keep Shabbat. However, he is keeping Shabbat. He is just keeping Shabbat in a different way than the Pharisees are keeping it. Now, other people said, well, how could a sinner do such miraculous signs? In other words, if this was really Yeshua who healed this man, and if this man isn't keeping Shabbat, how could that possibly be the case? Because God doesn't work that way. And so they were divided. So you got now two different opinions, you see? It had to be a good man who did it. It couldn't have been a good man who did it. And so finally they turned again to the blind man. This is verse 17. And they said, well, what do you have to say about him? It was your eyes he opened. And the man says, he is a prophet. Now, as we get to verse 18, I want to follow David Stern's translation about one point. Most English translations start in verse 18 by saying the Jews. However, Stern renders it the Judeans, and he's saying that within Judea, the land, that geography, there were those who were in opposition to Yeshua and to other groups of Jews. But it says the Judeans still did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they sent for the man's parents. Verse 19, is this your son, they asked. Is this the one you say was born blind? How is it that now he can see? Verse 20, well, we know he is our son. That's a good answer, isn't it? One thing we're sure of, that is our son. It's not someone who looks like him, it's him. And number two, we know he was born blind. So this is our son, he was born blind. 21. But how he can see now or who opened his eyes, we don't know. Why don't you ask him? He's old enough, he'll speak for himself. Now, why are they talking like this? Verse 22 makes an explanation. His parents said this because they were afraid of these Judeans. Because already Judeans had decided that anyone who acknowledged that Yeshua was the Messiah would be put out of the synagogues. And that's why his parents said, he's of age, ask him. In other words, they're afraid that if they say something good about Yeshua, it's going to get them in trouble with those Judean Jews who are against Yeshua. Do you see that? That's what the text is trying to say. So it's focusing on this. If you even acknowledge Yeshua was the Messiah, you can get in trouble. Now, I want you to understand something. This was not the position of all Jews. You'll see this through the text, that many Jews are disciples. In fact, all of the disciples who are now with Yeshua and experience this, guess what they were? They were Jews, and they were Israeli Jews as well. Now, in Capernaum, or Kfar Nahum, there were Messianic Jews who continued to participate in normal synagogue life until at least the 4th century. So it was not true that all Messianic Jews got put out of synagogues at a certain point. In fact, there is evidence that in many places, Messianic Jews continued to be part of general synagogue life, including in Jerusalem. However, it is also clear that as the result of this kind of conflict, Messianic Jews did start their own synagogues, what we would call Messianic synagogues, where every kind of Jew was welcome, but the synagogue itself was definitely Messianic. And what I mean by that is it continued to do all the normal Jewish things, but it proclaimed Yeshua and faith in Yeshua. Verse 24, second time, they summoned the man who had been blind. Give the honor to God, they said. We know this man, speaking of Yeshua, is a sinner. And he replies, well, before we get there, give glory to God. You see, what they understand is whatever healing you experienced was from God, but that man must have been a sinner, because he's not one of us, he's not a Pharisee, he's not part of our party. And verse 25, this man replies, whether Yeshua is a sinner or not, I don't know. But one thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see. I don't know this man. I've been blind all my life. I have not been seeing what's been going on. But I tell you one thing, I see now, and I'm happy. So verse 26, they said, well, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? And he says, I told you already, and you didn't listen. You see, just because you have a miracle and just because you tell someone else about it doesn't mean they're going to pay attention or agree with you. They may try to explain it away. But this guy is like, he's using a combination of Jewish humor and Jewish chutzpah. He says, I told you already and you didn't listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too? You want me to tell you this so that you can become a disciple of Yeshua? Is that it? You see, that's a good Jewish answer, isn't it? And then they hurled insults at him and they said, you're this fellow's disciple. Now remember, how long has this guy known Yeshua? A few minutes? They said, you're this fellow's disciple. We are disciples of Moses, Moshe. We know that God spoke to Moshe, but as for this fellow, we don't even know where he comes from. Speaking of Yeshua. Well, what's happening here is very important for all of us in a Messianic synagogue to understand. We have to pay close attention to this. What's being presented is a false argument, a false dichotomy. I want you to see it. The idea is if you're a real Jew like we are, you follow Moses. But if you follow this one, you're not really Jewish the way we are. Now, later on, like in our era, the argument goes differently. It's, you're not Jewish at all. But here, the challenge is, you're not godly because you're not a Pharisee. But it could have been Sadducees. It could be Reformed Jews today. It could be conservative Jews or Orthodox Jews saying, you're not Jewish because you're not Orthodox. Do you know Orthodox Jews will say that to conservative Jews and to reform Jews? And it's like, you know, kicking the dog and the dog bites the cat and the cat, you know, claws the little kid. And so the Orthodox kicked the conservative kicked the reform kicked the messianics. and we have to be ready to stand our ground. Not that it always happens this way. I'm just playing with you. But there's a presentation of a false dichotomy. You are this fellow's disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. And the man answers, well, that's remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, speaking of Yeshua, and yet he opened my eyes. And we know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly man who does his will. And nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. Okay, now he's taking a position. Do you see it? He's now arguing for Yeshua being a man of God because of what's happened. And to this, they replied, you were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture at us? And they threw him out. So what is he actually guilty of? He's guilty of speaking honestly about what happened. Number one. He's guilty of speaking well of Yeshua. Number two. Number three, he's guilty of presenting good news about what Yeshua had done for him. And this group of Judeans, before you judge them, they were just like Yeshua's disciples that we read about at the beginning, because they thought this man had been born blind because of his sin, right? And so then you get it. Oh, man, we can all be like this. We can all jump to conclusions and get things wrong and be judging people in the wrong way because we focus on the wrong thing. And Yeshua said his blindness wasn't because of sin. His blindness was not because of sin. His healing, though, was because of God. Sometimes you can get lost in the analysis about what caused the problem, and you forget to honor God who solved the problem. Verse 35, well, Yeshua heard that this man had been thrown out, and when he found him, he said, okay, now put yourself in this position. All Messianic Jews who feel sorry for ourselves when our family mistreats us, or someone in our community doesn't like what we just said about Yeshua. And we want people to say, oh, you poor thing. So Yeshua finds him, and he only asks him one question. Do you believe in the Son of Man? Do you believe in the Son of Man? Now, you might not know what Yeshua is actually asking him. But if you have read the book by Daniel Bayarin, an Orthodox Jew and scholar, who wrote a book called The Jewish Gospels, The Story of the Jewish Christ, Bayarin argues that Son of Man, here in John's Gospels and the other Gospels, as well as in the book of Daniel, is used specifically to denote the Messiah, who is God who becomes a man. That's the specific use. And that Son of God, paradoxically, can be used about the human side of godly people. But Son of Man is reserved in this time period for God who becomes a man. So Bayarin argues that you do well to read that book if you haven't, or to read parts of it. Some of it are strange, but the other parts are useful. Okay, so when Yeshua says, do you believe in the Son of Man? He's saying, do you believe in Messiah who is Adonai, who is God himself? Now, if you're a modern Jew, you might answer and say, Messiah, who is Adonai and God himself? No, only Christians believe that. I'm Jewish, I can't believe that. But this is a Jew asking a Jew. And he says, well, who is he, sir? Tell me so that I may believe in him. In other words, he also is looking for the coming Messiah, and he, like many Jews of that time period, were expecting Messiah to be God coming down to earth as a man. Who is he? Tell me so that I may believe in him. And Yeshua says, you have now seen him. In fact, he's the one speaking with you. And this is a dramatic way of saying, it's me. I am the Son of Man. And then the man says, Lord, I believe. And he worships. He worships him. Lord, I believe. You see, what is he saying? He's believing. You have to understand what Son of Man means. He's saying, Lord, I believe you are Adonai, that Messiah is Adonai. The man worships Yeshua. And in Hebrew, when you worship, in this particular way, it means he bows down and worships. You can't just worship a man. You can only worship God. And so this is an essential aspect. If Yeshua were not Adonai, we could not worship him. We could respect him, but we couldn't worship him. Now, again, let me just remind you, all of this controversy that we just read about was happening within the Jewish community. There was no debate about whether Yeshua's disciples had stopped being Jewish. That issue would only emerge later, but in our day, it's a key issue. Because now we're told a false dichotomy. You can't be Jewish and believe in Yeshua. You can't be a disciple of Moses and a disciple of Yeshua over here. So I want to look at one more passage, and this one I think is fantastic. It's a moment when Messianic Jewish believers thought that the Apostle Paul had renounced his Jewishness and had become an apostate, that's what the Greek text will say, by teaching Messianic Jews to give up their Jewish way of life. Okay, so you've got to turn to Acts chapter 21 for this. You see, Paul faced an accusation that when he became a disciple of Yeshua, he stopped being a disciple of Moses and he rejected Torah. But the accusation was coming from the Messianic Jewish community. Isn't that interesting? Not from the Pharisees, not from the Sadducees, not from other rabbinic Judaisms, but from the Messianic Jewish community. And it was based on reports that Messianic Jews had received about Paul's view of Torah. And Acts 21 presents it to us, starting in verse 17. If you're there, wave at me so I can see that. Okay, follow with me. Luke, who writes this, says, when we arrived at Jerusalem, the brothers there received us warmly. The next day, Paul and the rest of us went to see James, whose Hebrew name would have been Yaakov, so it better if it was said Jacob instead of James. And all the elders were present. Paul greeted them, and he reported in detail what God had done among the Goyim, among the Gentiles, among the other nations through his ministry. And when they heard this, they praised God. And then they said to Paul, you see, brother, how many thousands of Jews have believed. How many Jews have believed? Many thousands of Jews. So their experience, the experience of Yaakov, James, and the other Messianic Jews who were disciples of Yeshua's in Jerusalem, is thousands of Jews are believing. And all of them are zealous for what? Torah. They're zealous for Torah. And they've been informed, Paul, that you teach all the Jews in the diaspora who live among Gentiles to turn away from Moses, telling them not to circumcise their children or to live according to our Jewish customs. So here's the accusation. You, Paul, you teach. Now, when it says teach, in other words, it means you make disciples a certain way. You disciple diaspora Jews so that they would reject Moses and reject Brit Milah circumcision, reject Jewish lifestyle. Now, where it says reject Moses, it uses a Greek word for apostasy. So you could translate it this way. You have become an apostate to Moses in the Torah. That's what we've been told. To be an apostate means you've defected from, you've revolted against, you've renounced or rejected or turned away. In other words, the Messianic Jews are saying to Paul, we heard that you became apostate regarding Moses and Torah, but we know it's not true. Now look, to this day, there are many Christians who believe that Paul actually did turn away from Torah and from Moses. And so they believe that they should also. And not only do many Christians believe this, many Jews believe that in the New Testament, you're taught that if you believe in Jesus, you've got to turn away from all things Jewish, the Torah, Moses, etc. Some of you will experience this with your families. Whether your families are Jewish and saying, oh my gosh, how could you go to such a group of people? Because they're not Jewish anymore, because they've turned away. And we haven't turned away from being Jewish. We haven't turned away from Moses or Torah. And if you're from a Gentile Christian family, you may face it another way where your family says, oh my gosh, you become apostate. Not to Moses, not to Torah, apostate to Jesus and the church. How many of you can identify with these kinds of things? See, it happens in both directions. So you've got Christians who think Paul is against Moses and Torah. You've got Jews who think if you believe in Jesus, then you're against Moses and Torah. But it's interesting, this is neither a group of Gentile Christians, nor is it a group of rabbinic Jews. These are Messianic Jews. And so the writers of the New Covenant Scriptures are preserving for us the memory of a controversy within the Messianic community and how it was settled. Okay, so it goes on and says, well, what shall we do? All those thousands of Jews who are disciples of Yeshua and love Torah and love Moses, they will certainly hear that you have come, Paul. So you need to do what we tell you. There are four men with us who have made a vow. Take these men, join in their purification rites, pay their expenses so that they can have their heads shaved. And then, okay, now look in your Bible and see if it follows these ideas. And then everybody will know. Say that with me. Everybody will know that there is no truth in these reports about you. But they will know that you yourself are living in obedience to the Torah. So the leaders of the Messianic community in Jerusalem say to Paul, you've got to get this settled so that all of our people, all the Messianic Jews, know the truth about you. And the truth is, you love Moses and Yeshua. And you follow the teachings of Yeshua. And you follow the teachings of Moses. Do you see that? So that everyone would know. Now, you would think that because Paul then fulfills the direction that he's given, that everybody would know. So, why is it that everybody doesn't know? And I'll tell you one of the reasons. It's because people don't go over this stuff. They skip over these details, and they jump to other stuff which they think proves that Paul was against Torah and against Moses. And yet this was meant to settle the controversy forever. Do you see that? Verse 25, now as for the Gentile believers, we've written already to them our decision that they should abstain from food sacrificed to idols, from blood, from the meat of strangled animals, and from sexual immorality. We've already told them that. Verse 26, the next day Paul took those men, he purified himself along with them, and then he went to the temple to give notice of the date when the days of purification would end and the offering would be made for each of them. Now, pay attention just to a few little details. The Gentile believers were expected to follow some of the laws of Torah, but not all the laws that the Jewish believers were expected to follow. Do you see that? And when it says Gentile believers, it means Gentiles who put their trust in Yeshua. So this tells us that people from other nationalities and ethnic groups also put their trust in Yeshua, even though this was a Jewish discussion about Jewish things. They were thinking about the brothers who were not Jewish as well. But I want you to understand, verse 25 is speaking about discipleship. It's speaking about a lifestyle of faith, a lifestyle of obedience to God, and not just a one-time momentary decision where someone comes forward and says, I believe, but a continuing way of life. Now, I have an old friend. He has died, but he was approached by some street preachers, and they were like bothering him so much, and they said to him, just say this prayer with us. And to get them off his back, he prayed with them. Now, his testimony was, from the moment he prayed a confession of his sin and faith in Yeshua, God started hounding him. And after that moment, he actually came to faith. So when he prayed, he was just praying to get them off his back, but after he prayed, he became a believer. Now, I'm not saying it always works like that, but what he discovered is it's not just a prayer. It's a way of life. Disciples don't just pray once and then they live the way they always lived before. Disciples follow the Lord and learn his ways and put his ways into practice. That's very, very important. So you and I, we're called to be disciples of Yeshua. And that means we are to honor Yeshua and to honor Moses, and not to get caught up in anybody's false choices that they want to present to us that says, oh, you've got to pick one or the other. You can't have both. Yeshua now we honor as Messiah and we honor as Adonai. We do not honor Moses as Messiah. He's not the Messiah. And we don't honor him as Adonai. He's not Adonai, but Yeshua is. Moses is our teacher. He's the one God used to give us Torah. He's the one who God used to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt and to come before God as a nation and to enter into covenant with him. But I can tell you this, I appreciate Chris Swanson's insight in this. In order to honor Yeshua, you have to know him. To have a personal relationship with him, not just know about him. That blind man only knew a little bit, but he knew the truth of what he had experienced. And Yeshua wasn't satisfied with him knowing that little bit. He wanted him to become a disciple. Do you see that? Do you believe in me? And when he's saying believe in me, he doesn't mean can you agree intellectually. What he means is will you become faithful to me? So it really brings us to that closing moment of the story of the man that Yeshua healed of this blindness. That man was healed. He was healed because of Yeshua's initiative. The man was blind, and Yeshua went up to him. The only thing his disciples were interested in when they asked Yeshua was a theological question: whose sin is the cause of this? That's a tiresome question. The man wasn't pleading for healing. Yeshua saw him and said, it's not about his sin, it's about the glory of God being revealed. And he was also trying to make a declaration about who he, Yeshua, was. And so it was Yeshua who took the initiative, and the man was healed, and then that man told other people what happened. And when he, the blind man who's now healed, connects again with Yeshua, Yeshua wants to check on the condition of his faith. Do you believe in the Son of Man? That's what he wants to know. Do you have the faith of a disciple? The faith that will persevere. A faith that empowers a lifestyle of worship and obedience and witness. I believe as we're getting ready for the high holidays that it's important for us to give an account to the Lord. Do we have the faith of a disciple? And I want to pray for everyone who wants that kind of faith, the faith and the faithfulness of a true disciple. That is what God is trying to raise up in us, and that is how God wants to use us. He wants to use us as disciples who are bold to tell good news about what Yeshua really has done, who he really is, and to stand our ground as disciples of Yeshua and disciples of Moses, to stand our ground. Some people will find it harder to stand their ground with Moses because they're used to leaving him out. Don't leave him out. Other people will find it easier to stand their ground by leaving Yeshua out. Don't do that. A real disciple will stand with Moses and Yeshua as Paul did and as this man did, and will not allow other people to say, you cannot be Jewish and believe in Yeshua. Or if you come from a Gentile background, they're going to say, you can't be Jewish and believe in Yeshua. That's the same thing. They just mean it in a different way. One means you should be Jewish and not believe in Yeshua, and the other one means you should believe in Yeshua and have nothing to do with that Jewish baloney. But they're both saying the same things, false choices. Don't get caught up in it. What's the cure? Take your cues from that blind man. Use your Jewish sense of humor. Have a little chutzpah. If they press you too hard, you say, what, you want to be a disciple too, just like this? Okay, I can pray for you. Learn to stand your ground. And I don't mean to shoot people when they come into your house, just to be clear to all those people, because of the stand your ground laws, you know, in our state and others. I mean, learn to stand solidly with Yeshua and with Moses, and not to let anybody try to rip you apart as if you can't have both. So if you want that kind of boldness, you want to be strong in this way, I want to pray for you, because I believe God wants you to be strong. And if you say, oh, I want to be stronger, stand up. I want to pray for you. Lord, I thank you that you want to take us from a condition of weakness and make us strong. You want to take us from a condition of strength and make us even stronger. That we would be bold to declare the name of Yeshua. That we would be bold to declare Yeshua is Adonai, that Mashiach is Adonai. And that we would take a position of confidence in your Torah as revealed by Moses, and in your new covenant as revealed by Yeshua. And that we would be able to be new covenant people who love you, love Moses, and walk with you. Make us bold and strong. Give us the opportunity to do this in Yeshua's name. Amen.